Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everyone. Well, today is January 1. It's New Year's Day. It is 2019 on January 1st. Is that amazing? So I guess we could all say that we all survived 2018, except well, everyone that was born in 2018 and onward and before that is still here. My God, it's truly a blessing. Well, we've got a lot to discuss today. We're going to be welcoming Delphin Musler at 10:30, so I'm waiting to speak to him. In the meantime, we're going to cover some domestic as well as some international and national news. We'll start off with what's going on at the Yonkers Tribune. Evidently, a gentleman by the name of Andrew M. Friedman, he's a lawyer, wrote an article, and simply the title is Yonkers Tribune Blog Defamation Suit, Why It Should Fail. Well, evidently, he's in the Washington, D.C. area. He writes, the deputy police chief of Yonkers, New York, has sued an online blog, YonkersTribune.com, claiming the blog hosted hundreds of false and defamatory comments about him. The lawsuit faces some obvious hurdles. One, New York has a law that can lead to early dismissal of defamation lawsuits designed to stifle dissent. A strategic lawsuits against public participation or SLAPP law, and this lawsuit will likely face a SLAPP motion to dismiss under New York CVR S70-A. If Yonkers Tribune were to win a SLAPP motion to dismiss it, it could get an award of attorney fees. Two, a deputy police chief is almost certainly a public official who must prove he was defamed with actual malice. To succeed in a defamation lawsuit, very high standard of intent that is difficult to meet. Three, under the Federal Communication Decency Act, CDA, Section 230, 47 U.S.C. .S.230, Yonkers Tribune is probably an interactive computer service that was not responsible for creating the content, the alleged defamatory statements, in the comment section. The protections apply to state law claims too. Therefore, Yonkers Tribune should seek early dismissal under subsection C1 of the CDA. Excuse me. And then he writes, hashtag defamation law, hashtag First Amendment. Now, information about Andrew M. Friedman, he's an attorney at law with the firm of Shulman, Rogers, Gendel, Porty, and Ecker, PA, located in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. He primarily defends government investigations and litigates civil fraud. He also has a long-standing subspecialty in First Amendment defamation, false-like privacy litigation. From time to time, he writes about defamation claims of interest. He has successfully brought and litigated claims of interest. He has successfully brought and litigated, usually by settlement, high-profile defamation claims and has successfully defended many defamation lawsuits as well. Now, there are articles related to this subject that was entitled Perjurers Hiding Behind Gold Shields by C.J. Vega. Another is Defamation of Character or Free Speech by Brian Harrod. And a third one, Yonkers blogger hit with $7 million defamation lawsuit by Ernie Garcia. So the C.J. Vega, the first article that's related is by a former police, a member of the Yonkers Police Department, Defamation of Cancer or Free Speech by Brian Harrod. He's from the Yonkers Newswire. And Yonkers blogger hit with $7 million defamation lawsuit by Ernie Davis. He writes for the Gannett chain LoHUD or the Journal News. It's also known as that. So that's the story there. And we'll move on. Let's move on to some international stuff. Kim Jong-un is ready for talks, but he warns President Trump not to test North Korea's patience. This is a very intriguing situation with him. Listen to what he has to say. Bear with me a moment. We're going to get this going in a second.
starting off 2019 with a warning. In his New Year's address, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said that he is ready to meet with President Trump again at any time, but also threatened to take another path.
If the United States continues to break its promises and misjudges our patience by unilaterally demanding certain things and pushes ahead with sanctions and pressure against our republic, then we may have to seek another way to protect our country's sovereignty and interest and establish peace and stability.
It was the leader's 2018 New Year's address that kicked off a year of easing tensions. Three meetings with the South Korean President Moon Jae-in, and a historic summit with U.S. President Donald Trump, at which the two leaders signed a vague agreement toward denuclearization. Since then, the North has become frustrated that the U.S. hasn't lifted sanctions, even after North Korea took initial steps, halting its missile tests and blowing up nuclear test sites. But the U.S. is waiting to lift its sanctions until it confirms that North Korea's denuclearization is full and final. Satellite images have suggested ongoing activity at the North's nuclear and weapons facilities. The U.S. has made some concessions, suspending joint military drills with South Korea. With his demands, Kim did say that the North would cease producing, testing, and spreading its nuclear arsenal. Ultimately, a second U.S.-North Korea meeting could be in the cards for 2019. Just over a week ago, Donald Trump tweeted that he is looking forward to his next summit with Kim. The North Korean leader also has agreed to make his first ever visit to the South Korean capital, expected to take place this year.
So that's the report from North Korea. And then something else happened at a station in the United Kingdom. It was in the city of Manchester that three people were wounded in a knife attack on New Year's Eve. The British counterterrorism police were investigating a multiple stabbing in which the suspect reportedly shouted Allah at the Manchester railway station on New Year's Eve, officials said yesterday. A man and a woman, both in their 50s, and a police officer were being treated for knife injuries following the stabbings on Monday evening at Manchester Victoria Station in the northwestern English city. Witness Sam Clark, or Clack rather, he's 38, a BBC radio producer, said he heard the suspect shouting Allah before and during the attack. He quoted the suspect as saying, "As long as you keep bombing other countries, this sort of shit is going to keep happening," end quote. The male suspect has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. Greater Manchester Police, the GMP, said in a statement, "The woman suffered injuries to her face and abdomen, and the man was wounded in the abdomen, while a British Transport police officer sustained a stab wound to the shoulder. Their injuries were described as serious but not life-threatening. Two members of the public were taken to hospital. The incident happened at around 8:50 local time, when many revelers in the city would have been enjoying New Year's Eve celebrations." Clack said, "I just heard this most blood-curdling scream and looked down the platform. He came towards me. I looked down and saw he had a knife, a kitchen knife with a black handle with a good 12-inch blade. It was just fear, pure fear." Clack said police officers used a stun gun and pepper spray before 6 or 7 officers jumped on the man. Clack said he heard the alleged knifeman shouting Allah during the attack. He added, quote, "He shouted it before, he shouted during it, Allah. A witness who gave her name as Rebecca told the Daily Mirror newspaper, "I heard the most blood-curdling scream I've ever heard and turned to see everyone running towards me. I jumped off the tram track and started to run down the tram lines and hid behind some concrete slabs under one of the arches. I was just really scared. I didn't know if I was going to die," she says. Police declared the attack a critical incident. The GMP, Assistant Chief Constable Rob Potts, said the investigation was being led by Crown Police and officers were keeping an open mind. night's events will have understandably worried people, but I need to stress that the incident is not ongoing. A man is in custody, and there is currently no intelligence to suggest that there is any wider threat at this time, he said. While we don't yet know the full circumstances, we are keeping an open mind. Officers from counterterror policing Northwest are leading the investigation. This is to ensure we have all the expertise available to us in progress and progress our investigation as soon as we possibly can. The city's New Year celebration went ahead at Albert Square despite the incident, with a firework display taking place as planned, though increased security was brought in. The city experienced a suicide attack in May of 2017 when 27 people were killed and 139 wounded at a concert by the U.S. singer Ariana Grande at the Manchester Arena. The bomber, Salman Abedi, 22, was born and raised in Manchester. So that is the story there. Really very, very frightening circumstance. Let me quickly go over to our studio screen and just tell you a little bit of what's going on in our neck of the woods. Let's find out what they're doing at the Cabot Creamery, and then we'll be back.
Hey, you a judge?
Well, sorta. I report on cheese. I don't judge.
Well, I heard on the radio Cabot Cheddar always wins awards for taste.
Well, let me see my notes. Best taste? Check. Best texture? Check. The farm families in Cabot, Vermont have won every major award in the cheese world.
Every award?
Every.
What about the U.S. Cheese Championships?
Cabot's won that many times.
How about the American Cheese Society Contest?
Cabot won it.
World Cheese Championship Award?
Best in class on cheddar.
Fiery Food Challenge?
Cabot.
International Fancy Food Show?
Cabot rules.
The Stanley Cup?
That's hockey.
Oh.
Look, Cabot's won awards for best sharp, best light, best butter, and best cheddar.
Yeah, but a certain big cheese company's TV ad show, they won an award from judges wearing bright yellow lab coats.
Oh, those are actors.
Not real judges?
Real judges wear white lab coats.
They do.
Look, Cabot is best because they own the company, ship the milk, make the cheese. They won so many times, the real judges even asked one of Cabot's cheesemakers to be a judge.
I don't believe you.
Here, taste.
Hey, I can taste why Cabot's won every award.
You be the judge.
Can I get to wear a yellow lab coat?
White lab coat. Check.
The best tasting cheddar on the planet is...
Time and time again.
Cabot Cheddar.
Check.
Welcome back. This is Westchester on the Level. Evidently, Russia has detained a U.S. citizen in Moscow over suspected espionage. So Russia has detained a U.S. citizen in Moscow accused of spying, the FSB Security Service said on Monday. It said in a statement that the American was detained on Friday while carrying out an act of espionage, end quote, and that a criminal case had been opened. The statement identified the American in Russian using a name that appeared to translate as Paul Whelan, W-H-E-L-A-N. No other details were immediately available. The arrest came with Russia embroiled in a number of spy scandals with the West, from the alleged poisoning by Russian agents of former double agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter in England, to the United States conviction of Russian Maria Butina for acting as an illegal foreign agent. So we'll be learning more about this, I'm sure, as the days transpire. And then I want to quickly move over to something else with regard to the national scene. Evidently, the U.S. Democrats are there are some U.S. Democrats, particularly, that are preparing to wield power in the House. A new committee chairs are poised to have a big impact on Trump's remaining time in office. So it seems that on January 3, in just two more days, Democrats will officially take control of the U.S. House of Representatives, giving them authority over the Chambers Committee and the power of subpoena, a new tool in their quest to take on Donald Trump. The new Democratic committee chairs are likely to press the Trump administration on issues ranging from the personal behavior of administration officials to the actions of the president, both during his time in office and before. Ultimately, the Democratic control of the House could have the power to impeach Mr. Trump, a path many in the party would prefer not to take at the moment, but one that exists within the realm of possibility. Now, the people we're going to describe are committee chairs who are likely to have the biggest impact on the White House and the president's future in office. First, we have Gerald Nadler. He's an incoming chair of the House Judiciary Committee. A Democratic congressman representing Manhattan's West Side, Gerald Nadler has been a foe of the president's since the 1980s and 1990s when the two locked horns over the then-property developer's plan for multiple high-rise buildings in Mr. Nadler's congressional district. Now, while Mr. Trump prevailed back then, this time Mr. Nadler has the upper hand. As the incoming chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Mr. Nadler, a 71-year-old trained lawyer and lifelong politician, will have the power to launch impeachment proceedings against Mr. Trump. So far, Mr. Nadler has given little hint over whether the committee is considering looking at impeachment articles, insisting that the discussion is premature. That could change, however, in the coming months. In the meantime, Mr. Nadler said he will focus on immigration, drilling down into the administration's policy of separating families that arrive illegally in the United States, and taking a tough questioning line against Kirstjen Nielsen, the Secretary of Homeland Security Secretary. Expect him to also keep a close eye on Robert Mueller's special counsel investigation, particularly with regards to the Justice Department and its new acting Attorney General, Matthew Whitaker. Then we have Elijah Cummings. He's the incoming chair of the House Oversight Committee. A 67-year-old lawyer from Baltimore, Elijah Cummings has served in the House of Representatives for more than two decades as a member and former chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. In January, Mr. Cummings will take over as chair of the House Oversight Committee. In the run-up to his appointment, the longtime congressman has sent dozens of letters to government agencies, officials, as well as the Trump administration or organization, asking for more details on a number of controversies that have dogged the administration. Mr. Cummings plans to investigate whether certain Trump administration officials use government services and personnel for non-official business. He will also probe cabinet members' travel spending habits and whether any officials, including Mr. Trump's daughter Ivanka, have used personal email accounts to conduct official business. He also plans to look into the Trump Organization's business dealings and how much business has come in from foreign governments to Trump hotels and properties since the president took office. Like Mr. Nadler, Mr. Cummings has been concerned about the family separation policy and said he would demand further details from government agencies about the remaining separated children. Then we have Adam Schiff. He's going to become the incoming chair of the House Intelligence Committee. For the past 2 years, Adam Schiff has railed against his Republican colleagues on the House Intelligence Committee, alleging that they had worked in coordination with the White House to prevent a real congressional investigation into Russian interference in the presidential 2016 election and possible links between Mr. Trump and Moscow. Excuse me. In January, Mr. Schiff will have the authority to drive the investigation as the committee's new chair. It is a big moment for him, a 58-year-old Harvard-educated prosecutor. Mr. Schiff has served in Congress since 2001, representing the California district just north of Los Angeles. Yet it is only since Mr. Trump took office that Mr. Schiff has become a household name, appearing as a frequent critic of the president on cable television. As the new head of the committee, Mr. Schiff is expected to reemerge and re-energize the House's investigation into Mr. Trump's dealings with not just Russia, but Saudi Arabia, as well as any financial dealings the president may have had with foreign powers like Moscow and Riyadh before taking office. His leadership will represent a new chapter in the House's Russia investigation with 25 full-time committee staff members, many of them looking solely at Mr. Trump's Russia connection, a potential game changer for Democratic oversight. So very, very intriguing set of circumstances there, that's for sure. Bear with me a moment here. Okay, 1 second. Rid of this. 1 second as we move on. All right, 1 second here. Oh, there we go. And one second. Wanted to check the time. Yeah, we're good here time-wise, so let's find out what we're doing at the Yonkers Tribune, and then we'll be back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Welcome back. In case you want to reach out to the Yonkers Tribune, the best number to reach them at is 347-415-4326. So 347. Now let's find out what's going on a little bit more local. Ocasio-Cortez, she won't say if she's taken a salary during the shutdown. That's an interesting perspective. Out of Washington, we hear that when parts of the government shut down nearly 2 weeks ago, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez challenged members of Congress to have some integrity, quote unquote, and not accept their salaries while federal workers were being stiffed. But she's not ready to say whether she practices what she preaches. Ocasio-Cortez first urged that lawmakers work for free on December 22, the first day of the shutdown. It's completely unacceptable that members of Congress can force a government shutdown on partisan lines and then have congressional salaries exempt from that decision, the incoming New York Democrat wrote. She doubled down when someone on Twitter suggested that move would only hurt middle and lower income lawmakers. Speaking as a working class member-elect, I think that's only fair, she said of Congress skipping their paychecks. It would also cause members who actually depend on their salary to think twice about leadership and take a shutdown vote more seriously. Now that the shutdown is stretching into the new Congress, Ocasio-Cortez's spokesman didn't respond to numerous emails, texts, and calls from the New York Post asking that she herself is doing. And other New York lawmakers have already announced that they've given up their pay until the government resumes normal business. Right at the start of the shutdown, Republican Representatives Lee Zeldin and Elise Stefanik announced they had asked the House Chief Administration Officer to withhold their checks. They were joined by Democratic Representative Adriano Espaillá, who said he was doing it in solidarity with New York's 14,000 federal employees. Rose, he's from a Democrat from Staten Island, who will be sworn in alongside Ocasio-Cortez on Thursday, announced Monday he would donate his pay to a local charity. This shutdown is an insult to Americans who work their heart out every day because, unlike Congress, they can't afford to act like children, Rose said. In the past, Ocasio-Cortez has openly fretted about how she would afford Washington, saying she might need to start collecting some of her $174,000 a year salary before finding a place to live. In a profile that ran in the New York Times the day after November's general election, she called her transition to D.C. very unusual because she wouldn't be able to take a salary gig until her Capitol Hill job started. So how do I get an apartment, she asked. She added that she had been just kind of squirreling away and then hoping that gets me to January, the same month that CNBC reported that she was down to under $7,000 in savings. Okay, so that is the situation there. It's going to be very interesting to see exactly where things lay with regard to what's going on. Let me just bear with me one more second. All right, one second. I wanted to check just one other thing. Just bear with me a moment. And all right. Okay, I think I need to check one other thing. Bear with me a second here. And I'll just check one last thing. One second. This is going to be interesting because it speaks to Firebrand in the likeness, in the sense almost of President Trump. The far right Firebrand by the name of Jair Bolsonaro is going to take office as Brazil's president. So let's hear the report about him, and we'll get a better sense of what's going on here. So bear with me a moment.
You told me I had to pick one item out of all the maybe you might have. I downgrade my
and there we go. We're going to get started.
The election of Jair Bolsonaro caused conflict inside many Brazilian families. 26-year-old Gabriel Cassar is angry with his uncles and grandparents. It started with a social media post in which the leftist journalist gave reasons not to vote for the far-right candidate.
Here is the post that caused the disagreement. I said, no, uncle, it's a lie. You should check your information.
Gabriel comes from a middle-class military family, and his grandmother was so angry, she stopped paying for his health insurance. He did not expect that kind of revenge.
I cannot remember any time in a previous election when there was such great hatred. This time, it was not only I do not agree with you, but I cannot stand your existence. This time, it's not an opposition of classes, it's of values.
In 30 years of democratic elections, Brazilian society has never been so polarized. A short presidential campaign of unprecedented verbal and physical violence heightened tensions between friends and colleagues. After the president's inauguration, this group of restaurant workers is planning a pro versus anti-Bolsonaro football match. Recent corruption accusations against Bolsonaro, who promised clean politics, have changed the tone of discussions.
He earns 8,000 euros a month, has more than 25 million in his account. How do you justify it?
Who? Bolsonaro. But what are you saying? It's not him.
In the campaign, Bolsonaro benefited from social division. Public debate was fueled by political ads and fake news, and these friends even stopped talking to each other.
We played a lot during the campaign. It's like football. We're fighting on the pitch, but once it's over, we're all friends, and we're going to have a barbecue.
Several companies even banned political messages on clothing and in chat groups. Still, Bolsonaro's controversial policy plans will likely make tensions flare again.
Well, so that's the circumstance over there. Very, very interesting. I'm going to go over to our studio screen. There, here we are. We're going to await the arrival of Delphin Musa. He is the publisher and editor of Yonkers Insider. And we're going to talk to him about Governor Andrew Cuomo's inaugural presentation on Ellis Island, and those that are in attendance, those that are absent, and its implications, as well as other concerns in the Yonkers landscape. He's going to be joining us in about a minute, less than a minute's time. So it's just going to be very interesting to really comprehend what's happening here, what's happening in Albany, what's happening on Ellis Island, what's happening in the local arena here. Three people in the room are going to be the governor of the state of New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo. In the assembly, you've got Mr. Heasty. He's the leader of the Democratic conference in the assembly. And then we have Andrea Stewart Cousins, who originates out of Yonkers and still represents Yonkers in her district. And she is the Senate conference leader of the majority leadership. And so we're going to find out what's really going on and why some of these people are attending and why others are not, and if there are any ramifications to that end. So that's really the big and telling aspect of what's going on here. So our next guest is going to be none other than Yonkers Insider publisher and editor, Delphin Usler. And we're going to talk to him and ask him what other issues impact him or that impress him. And we get a good sense of different publications in the local arena, which is important because a lot of these operations are small, like me. There's just me. And at the Yonkers Tribune, there's just Delphin Usler. At the Yonkers Insider, you've got Rui Ben Ross. He's the Yonkers voice. Again, he works on his own. And then you have like Brian Harrod from the Yonkers Newswire. And we have different ideas, different concepts, some gel, some not. And what's really interesting is that the big boy in the room is always the Journal News or Low HUD or part of the Gannett chain of newspapers. And but they have more reporters, but they don't cover even as much as any of us individually and certainly not collectively. And then I shouldn't forget, of course, is Dan Murphy from Yonkers Rising, the print paper that comes out once a week, and Yonkers, Yonkers Times, that's what it is. I always get that confused. So Yonkers Times, and he's the editor of that. So, I see that Delphin Usler is on the line. Let's pull him in. Good morning, Delphin. Happy New Year.
Good morning, Hezzy. Happy New Year to you as well.
Oh, I'm so excited to start off the year with you on the show. I'm really, really, really thrilled, and I'm so glad that we're able to talk about a lot of issues. And one of the big issues that came about and was the realization that Governor Andrew Cuomo is going to hold his inaugural presentation on Ellis Island. And Ellis Island evokes a time when we welcomed many, many people from abroad, mostly from Europe, Italians and Irish and Jews and, I don't know, people from Greece and Spain and so on, Germany as well. So many people came into the United States. And now we have a president who's really very much against immigrants coming in. I think that from Europe they were mostly legal immigrants, but some of them were not. They were also running looking for asylum. Originally they were all asylum seekers. Later on they came in legally. And the same situation now we find on the southern border. Discomforted in any way by Andrea Stewart-Cousins not going to attend today's inaugural, and neither will Mr. Heastie from the Assembly?
It is something, I must say, because 4 years ago, apparently, because in the Daily News article, she went to the inauguration 4 years ago. I don't know what changed.
Yeah.
I don't know what changes in 4 years. And also the Assembly Speaker as well. I don't know. It really does speak what goes on in Albany. So usually the inauguration is seen as like a way of bringing people together, and it seems like with the two of them not showing up, it seems like there's like a separation there.
Definitely, it seems like there's a separation. It's interesting. There used to be some contention, if you remember, between the governor and Mayor de Blasio in New York. Mayor de Blasio is going to be there. And Carl I don't know what changed him all of a sudden that he's not going to show up. And there was talk that yesterday he might show and might not show. The latest information today is that he will not. And the real clinker here is, as far as I'm concerned, is Andrea Stewart-Cousins.
Yes,
she's
I agree.
She's now one of the people, one of those three in the room. She comes from Yonkers. She knows our situation. There's always talk that the governor is vindictive. That's a big word, but he might lash out at people who I guess turn on him. Why did they turn on him? What has he done? that upsets them so?
I don't really know, because you know, when the campaign was going on during the election, they were all running together saying we stand for the same thing. When she always uses the phrase, "Let's vote, Democrats win," they were all together. We're going to stand against President Trump and everything. Now all of a sudden there seems to be a separation. Really does, like I talked about for many months. The leadership style of Senator Andrea Stewart-Cousins leaves a lot to be desired. Because don't forget what happened last time she was in the proposed leadership. That's when the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference, was formed and everything. So it does speak. These people know her better than we do because they're her colleagues, and they sought to have themselves a conference and caucus with the Republicans. So really to speak about her, which is a major concern of mine, her leadership abilities going forward.
Well, I concur with you wholeheartedly about her leadership abilities. I question whether she has leadership capacity.
Yes.
She did lose the leadership role when all of a sudden the Independent Democratic Coalition got together under Jeff Klein. She was never able to have an accommodation with Jeff Klein, the senator, at that time. He was very powerful, she was, but he was the one that was in the room with the governor, and I think it was Mr. Flattery. Is that his name?
Yeah.
The Republican?
Flanagan,
I'm sorry. And so the thing is, what's changed? Does she have the capacity now to be one of the people in the room? And remember, it was about a year ago, I think she said that the governor didn't recognize her because she was black and because she was a woman.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yes. Yes, I remember that. I remember that whole episode and everything. It seems like she likes to, when she was in the room, she would blame it being about her color and also about her being a woman and everything. Now she's one of the three people in the room. So now I'm saying to myself, now's your chance to lead instead of complaining about when you weren't in the room.
Right.
Now you're going to be in the room. So what are you going to really do for the people that you represent? Now you have an actual voice as part of three men in the room and stuff like that. And, really, I have some grave concerns because I don't think she's up to the challenge. Hopefully I'll be proven wrong, but so far from what I've seen the last several years here, it's been a lot to be desired as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I agree with you again. I'm offended that she couldn't find another way to broach whatever she's angry about with the governor on a one-to-one basis when she represents the Senate conference leadership, the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, she may not know it, but I think a lot of other people, and I'm sure you know it, there are many factions in there. Of the Democrats.
Absolutely.
They have a supermajority at the moment. Some are ultra-liberal. Some are regarded as more complacent and more the old-world-style Democrats, whatever that is. But some are more left than the others.
It's actually a tough job for her also, too, because you got to bring all those factions together. Like you say, the ultra-liberal side of the party, you got other people, different sides of different parties, and that takes a unique leader to be able to bring all those factions together to be able to, because it's only like a very, very slight majority. So if anything ever happens wrong where someone goes off the reservation, then it becomes a close vote.
Well, I don't know what you think about this. I get the impression that the big fight now, before the inaugural, and first of all, I don't understand why they want to abandon the symbolism of this inaugural when they've been talking about protecting people that are illegal or immigrant families and individuals. I remember I saw Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Shelley Mayer, who's also a senator, under the Democratic Conference. They were there at, what do they call that, the Leakes and Watts property. I think they changed their name recently. I forgot their name. But the point is they were there because there was a separation of some children from their parents, and some of those kids went to Leakes and Watts. And only Congressman Engel was able to see them, but the others were there, I guess, in support. So if this was so important, there was symbolism there. They just showed up for a photo op. They knew they weren't going to be allowed in there, but they walked all the way into the building, and they walked back from the building a half hour later or something like that. Only the only Congressman Engel was able to speak to them. He was the spokesperson. Everybody showed up for that. There were about seven or eight of them just for the photo op. And now all of a sudden, when Andrea Stewart Cousins could be there, she's not going to show?
Yeah, because like I say, what the government's doing is what the government's doing is a good thing, because it's showing the symbolism about the immigration population and everything. That's what I'm saying. It would have been good for them to show up today, because what they campaigned on of standing up against President Trump and everything, of standing with us Democrats standing together, well, you're not exactly standing together if you don't show up for the inauguration. The inauguration is supposed to be like a positive event. You know, it starts a new year. It gives great hope. It gives new hope and everything, that things are gonna get better. And by these two leaders not showing up really puts a pall over the event, because, you know, because they basically put themselves above this event, you know, bringing all the party together and all sides together. But it just speaks volumes as to what's going on here. It really does show some people are more interested in themselves than they are in the whole perspective of helping the people.
Well, you know, I'm glad you pointed that out, because it causes me to think about what is the driving force behind this conduct. And it can't be that they're trying to accommodate one another. Certainly the governor is the governor. He's won the most number of votes in anybody. Very few people have actually exceeded his winning margin for governor or for other members of other elections. But the thing that's interesting is I think this is all about money. It's all about nothing more than money. They're fighting. They're killing each other. They're slugging it out because they want money. And they took the job when they ran for election. Now, all of a sudden, it's not enough. They need more. So they gave themselves a raise. They're going to start earning $110,000 as of, I think, tomorrow. Whenever it gets into effect, but for the new year, they're going to be making now $107,000 a year. They were making only $79,500 last year. So, you mean, was this what they went into office for? And then the big, and it's going to go up again next year to $140,000. It's supposed to be a part-time job.
But I agree. No, absolutely.
What's really weird is a lot of people in New York State don't earn $79,500, much less $110,000 or
really
$140,000 a year. There are many people here who don't even have a home or can't put food on the table. They can they may have one job or two jobs or three jobs. They're helping other people who are also in a bad state. What's wrong with these people?
I totally agree, Hezzy, absolutely. And, you know, there's also a lot of these food pantries. I see a lot of people go to these food pantries, because I volunteer some of the food pantries, and there's a lot of people going to the food pantries. A lot of people are hurting out there, and I'm saying to myself, for these two elected officials to be fighting over, you know, basically money, like you said, which is a good point, that they run just to get more and more, that they run, again, just to get more and more money, to add more money into their pockets. And I thought the thing was really to be an elected official was to help the people, and not to help yourselves. It's be public service, not self-service. And a lot of these circles, it's more self-service than public service. At least it looks to me. At least, like I said, in Albany, it's worse. It actually makes Yonkers look good in a lot of levels, to be honest, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I think we do look pretty good. It's just that there's a lot of crap from the past, and maybe we need to get rid of that. So you know, maybe
true.
We are. I hope we are. I don't like to prejudge these things, but you know what's interesting about the money too? That's like one aspect. They get the salary, but we should also understand that they get the salary, they get a stipend for going up to Albany whenever they have meetings. They get a stipend for lodging. They get a stipend for food. They get a car. They also get reduced prices for gasoline, and they get insurance as well. Now, how much more do you want? That
That's
adds up to a lot of money. Then on top of that,
when is enough enough? Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. When is enough enough? You know, they get more perks up there than the people that they represent. I don't think any of us get those kind of perks.
No, we don't get those perks. But then there's one other thing, and this is the real biggie. The real biggie is that they also want to have the capacity to earn money outside of their role as members of the New York State Legislature. So I think that Carl Heastie, for example, this past year he earned $20,000 from outside whatever he did. But the maximum permissible is $19,500. So, I mean, swallow your pride, you know, reduce your fees, drop it down to $19,500, and then you'll be in the good zone, so to speak.
Yeah, true. It seems legitimate to me.
There's one guy, I don't remember his name now. I'm always bad with names, but it turns out he also is a senator. He earned $500,000 last year on the side. And because things have changed a little bit on the state legislature, he may not want to fight that because they may make it illegal for him to earn that much to make it look like they're all doing the right stuff. So he may just pull away because he wants the $500,000. So evidently, he never really wanted to serve. He used the clout of becoming an elected official in order to make the money that he's now making. Now that he's making it, he probably doesn't need anybody. Remember when, Sheldon Silver did the same thing?
Oh, yes.
You know, Sheldon Silver also, he was making a fortune of money on the side. And I don't think he's in jail. They haven't thrown the key away. They haven't put him in the jail yet. How long is that going to take? So he dies of natural causes?
That's also true. Yeah, no, that's true too. Yes, jeez.
So really,
I don't care either. Boy, it really is something, has he? Because you know, you think that these elected officials, when they run, they all say when they candidate, you know, I'm here for the people. I'm here to fight for the people. But he's not really they're not really fighting for the people. They're fighting for themselves. How they can make their bank accounts bigger and bigger and bigger. Nothing really helped the people because the people there's a lot of people hurting in this state, and I'm saying to myself, but you guys said you're going to help them fight for the people. Now it seems like you're fighting more. It seems like this whole thing about them not showing up today is about the getting more and more money in their pocket and getting raises, and that's not what they said that they would get. That the Democrats said that they would bring. You know that they would bring policy to help the people, but it seems like they're helping themselves at this stage.
Well, it seems that that's the case. I don't quite get it. I don't know what their intent is. And I'm really very much afraid. I didn't have confidence in Andrea Stewart Cousins when she ran. I didn't like the way she ran a campaign. It was always like I thought there was a sense of disgust with some people that she wanted to talk to and others that she wouldn't. She was very, very picky about where she would go and what she would talk about and who she would talk to. And it was like this I don't know what it was, but it stank to high heaven. And then I was going to actually write about what I felt was so bad about this. And then I said, you know what? It's silly to write about and try to demean these people for the lack of capacity by them to deliver funds for Yonkers, because they know we're not getting our fair share. They know that they could change the equation. They didn't need to be in a leadership role to change all that.
That's true.
Mouthing BS, and they never got anything accomplished. And I thought, well, so what if they're one of the three people in the room? Are they going to change the equation? I didn't
think so.
I didn't think so either, to be honest. Well, I guess so we're in agreement there, but now I'm very concerned that Andrea Stewart Cousins' attitude with the governor, and if he is vindictive, I don't know. But if that's what some people say, then why doesn't she know that he might be vindictive? And is she willing to put us up as fodder for her bullshit game in order for us to suffer? If she wanted us to suffer, we didn't need her.
That's also true. She stood up
and wanted to become the leader of and representative of Yonkers and New Rochelle and other places like that when she can't deliver.
If the governor is vindictive and is going to hold her accountable for her not showing up today, you know, it's her personal stuff is putting us in trouble. You know, the people, because we're the ones that could get hurt, because maybe he may not get hurt. She's not going to get hurt at all, because the money she makes, also the perks she gets and everything, it's the people that should come first. And it seems like to me, when it comes to Andrea Stewart Cousins, it seems like that she's the most important thing, and the people are on the back burner or something. It really is mind-boggling to me and everything.
Well, I'm very, very concerned. I'm a little bit frightened by her attitude with the governor. If she was so concerned about the governor's positions, why didn't she speak up before? What was it that kept her silent? And what is it about now that she thinks she can be so emboldened to play a game of calling him names, claiming that he doesn't see her? He evidently did see her. And evidently, he's not offended because she's a woman or she's black.
I don't know why.
Is she accusing him of some sort of bigotry and bias here? Is that what he is? Doesn't seem like it.
Doesn't seem like it to me either, to be honest. I agree. It all seems like Andre keeps making excuses and everything. I'm saying to myself, why don't you claim you're a leader, but why don't you lead? Unless you don't have those abilities and qualities to be a leader, then you're going to find reasons to I didn't get this because of that. I didn't get this because of that. I'm saying to myself, the people have had it with the excuses, because we've had the excuses for the last two to four years in terms of her. Now you're the leader, but I'm not really confident as far as that's concerned of her changing the equation as far as Yonkers getting better funding and everything. Because like you say, all these leaders know we have been underfunded and everything. And the problem is, what are you going to do about it to change the political equation or financial equation in Albany to help Yonkers better out, to help our students?
Well, you know, look, I'm not looking for more than anybody else. I'm certainly looking for an equal perspective.
Absolutely, to trash
Yonkers, would be nice if we have somebody who could represent us in a good way. In an amenable manner, in an adult fashion, with a governor of the state of New York. God help us. What is she doing? She wants to pick a fight with the governor? Really? Who does she think is going to survive?
And also, on the first day of the term and everything, because the inauguration is seen at the beginning of the year. I'm saying to myself, the first day you're going to do this? To me, it speaks volumes that some people, you know, she is for herself and not for helping people. Because, you know, my concern is he gonna hold this against her, and then is that gonna theoretically hold against us, because she's our representative?
Well, it will. I mean, I think it will. I mean, all he has to do is not include her in any important discussions. She may not even know what's going on. She knows what it's like to be ostracized and pushed to the curb, and nobody talks to you. She does that all the time. But the point is, when she's going to feel the heat as the governor decides to really be vindictive, assuming that some of the claims are right, then why did she do this? Why is she picking a fight? And that's where I don't understand, because the fight is not going to hurt her. She could easily quit, and it wouldn't mean a thing to her. But guess what? We'll still have to live in Yonkers, not having gotten a fair share. And what is she going to do? She's not going to represent us well?
That's what it looks like today, Hazzy, because it really, really is, for me, I'm saying myself, it's something that should have been done maybe if she wanted to do something like that, do it behind the scenes, not doing this kind of open way, especially, like I said, inauguration is supposed to be positive, you know, where the person who did inaugurate talks about their agenda, what they intend to do in this coming year, and people come together, Republicans and Democrats, and it seems like to me it's all about the money, it's all about the, you know, but when they were running, they never had a concern about the governor. They were always, you know, Andre would always say, oh, I worked with the governor all the time, and I'm saying to myself, then why are you doing this now? When you had the chance to say something about the governor, you didn't do it.
Right. So what was the big deal? I guess she wanted to become reelected at that time, so she didn't say anything against the governor.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. Did she want to jump ship, and did she want to go somewhere else? Did she want to go for Cynthia Nixon? Then why didn't she join the team if she thought that she was so terrific? Or maybe she thought that she couldn't win, so she decided to stick with a guy that she knew could win. And certainly the Republicans, I don't know if she was so averse to the Republicans, but certainly the Republicans didn't support Molinaro. So he was bankrupt before he could get started. So you have to really question that. Why that happened. So that's the Republican Party problem. But, you know, for us to now have a problem with the Democratic conference leader, with Andrea Stewart-Cousins, and I remember when she was running for the election, all she used to say was, well, if Democrats get out together, we'll win, and this will do this, and we have to worry about women's reproductive rights. And, yeah, well, And what about in funding for schools and doing this and doing that? And is she going to live up to any of her words?
I really have my high doubts about her keeping her words. I think it was just rhetoric during the campaign just to try and get herself reelected. I hope I'm proven wrong because, you know, it's good to have if the city of Yonkers can succeed, it'd be great. But I'm saying if she doesn't follow through on her rhetoric during the campaign, and those things are just words, then because like I say, actions speak louder than words, and actions today are, you know, really loud in terms of not showing up for the inauguration of Governor Cuomo. It's something. And then like we all say, Governor Cuomo's really been a good elected official, because a lot of these elected officials, you and me, have a thing about that they don't do op-eds. Governor Cuomo does one every month, and he's really out there, open, transparent way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know what's so bad about him. I think that he is pretty much a loner, in the sense that I get the sense that he's just a very, very alpha male. He's very much in the leadership role. But he's also a leader, and he might force some people's hands. In other times he might be more accommodating. I think if you show him respect, you'll get it back. But he's still a very powerful figure. Look, he's still only the state governor, but he's slugging it out with the president of the United States. And
true. Yes.
He's really doing well. I didn't see Andrea Stewart-Cousins talk much about Puerto Rico. She didn't visit there.
That's true.
And she had constituents that were there that lived in Puerto Rico. Not a word from her. Why? Why? She couldn't even just say a word. She could have also joined the governor in just showing support. And that's the thing that offends me. She is making she's insulting the governor because she chooses to and because she can. by not being there. Same thing with Mr. Heastie. I don't understand what they're trying to do, but it doesn't smell good to me. And fighting off the governor, I think we're going to get hurt. And I feel abandoned.
That is my concern as well. Yeah. Jeez.
I feel that she's abandoned us, and not that I ever cleaved to her in any way, shape, or form. I never really cared for her all that much because I never found anything that she ever said to be credible because it never proved to be true in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And because she's powerful now, everybody's kissing her butt. I'm not going to be kissing anybody's butt. I never do that anyway. But the bottom line is she better not hurt us.
I agree.
I feel abandoned by this woman, and I don't care if she's black or blue. The bottom line is she better deliver, because I'm not going to take it very easy. If the good Lord keeps me here, I'll be slugging it out with her from the day one that she doesn't deliver for this city. And April Fool's Day is when she's supposed to pass the budget. We'll see if she can get it done, and I want to see the result of what she did for this city. And not just this city, don't get me wrong. I want to see what she does for the entire state. That's her job. She represents all the states as the Senate conference leader. She better do a good job.
I agree. Hopefully, but like I said, I'm not too optimistic because, like I said, I've always thought about her leadership qualities that they were lacking and everything. And like you said, she criticized the governor last year for not allowing her in the room about a female, about black and everything. I'm thinking to myself, geez, is that any way for a proposed leader to act? You know, it's about bringing people together and it's about fighting your way into the room. I don't think so either, to be honest. It's unfortunate.
You know, whatever happened to the people that used to run for political office and actually delivered? I don't know where those people went.
To be honest, as they really, it's, you know, all these people make their promises during the campaign. I'm going to do this once I get elected. I'm going to do that, and nothing ever happens. And then we don't hear from them again until they run for the re-election. I'm saying to myself, but what did you do in 2 years? You said you're going to report back to us.
No,
they don't. Sadly, they don't.
Well, I don't know why we vote for these people over and over. They prove nothing to me. They don't deliver. So why is it because the people who are running against these, people who are entrenched in office, that people don't know anybody else? Maybe that's the thing, too. You know, in Yonkers, they don't start electioneering until 2 months before the election. How about hearing from people in January so we know what they stand for? Why don't they make themselves known?
The pattern's been the last couple of years. Like you say, they don't really say what they are and what they want to bring to the table until 2 months before the election. I'm saying to myself, once you announce, you should be talking about issues and you should be bringing it out in the public as to what's going on. But unfortunately, they don't, sadly. That's why we have the election. That's why I probably have the election system that we have, because a lot of these people who are running, you think they'd be galvanized and stuff, and they say they're galvanized, but are they really galvanized, or they just want to get their name out there or something? It does speak volumes, because you make a great point, you know, that people should be, when they announce, they should be saying what their platform is or what they'll bring to the table. And sadly, you don't hear from those candidates until 2 months before the election, like you say.
Well, I understand there's some sort of stipulation that if you announce too soon, whatever that is, let's say if you announce in January that you're contemplating the run, that goes against you or something. I'm not quite sure what the legality is, so people avoid that. However, there's a way to sidestep that legality, not by doing anything illegal, but by simply issuing an opinion piece, an op-ed, tackle a particular issue that you think is pertinent to you as well as, of course, the public interest, because you want to represent the public on a particular issue. So tell us what you think. You know, if you tell us in January one thing and then maybe a month later you tell us about another issue, and then the third month into a third, and then eventually – then everyone will, at least more people will know who you are.
That's
right?
True, yes.
And everybody should share in that op-ed piece. There shouldn't be one rag anywhere that doesn't get your piece. What's the point of just putting it in one publication when there's so many,
yeah,
even though they're only run by one man? You know, there's you and there's Dan and there's and Ben Ross and Brian Harrod and there's myself. So I guess there are about five of us all together that work on the Yonkers landscape. And then, of course, we can't forget the Journal News, the part of the Gannett. When you look at that, everyone should have it because
absolutely.
Don't they want to be known?
That's true, too. Yes, no, absolutely. Because, like I said, a lot of these candidates, they send to their, you know, favorite news entity. Like you say, they should send to everybody and make everybody part of the process, because that's how you get your message out better. Because if you have everybody involved and send it to everybody, then that's how you get your message out, not just send to one person. And really, that defeats the purpose, I think.
Well, all I know is that there might be some publications that may lean Republican. There may be some publications that lean Democrat. There will be some publications that lean another way. You know, there are all kinds of flavors. But you know what? There's always somebody that you don't think reads a particular paper that actually does. And that person is the one you want to reach. And then there may be 20 in another publication, and the other 80 might be thinking something else. But why would you want to deny yourself? It's no big deal to get your message out everywhere at the same time. What's the problem?
Absolutely. No, it's true. Absolutely. Very true. It makes you wonder some of these candidates who they listen to and everything. Almost like they get led by the hand with some of these things. And it's sad because, like
a lot
I say,
of these handlers.
Yeah. It really is true.
Those handlers are no good. They don't know the area.
Absolutely.
They don't know the landscape. Today
yeah,
they're
no,
in
absolutely.
Yonkers. You know what? Tomorrow they're in Iowa. And the following
That's
day they're
going
to be in Montana and then California and then Texas and then Florida. What the hell do they know about any of it?
That's
they don't know
true.
The demeanor of the public. They don't even know what the issues are.
Absolutely.
And
no,
so they
absolutely.
Run a generic they run a generic race. And
absolutely.
Like, what
That's
does that
true.
Have to do with
yeah.
us?
Nothing to do with us, because, like I say, a lot of these people, a lot of these handlers don't even know the issue that reside in Yonkers. And, you know,
right.
they just, like I say, they go on to another state and everything a couple of days later and everything, and they don't know anything. And they're basically giving this candidate advice, and at the end of the day, their advice, they don't know anything about our area. So their advice shouldn't mean anything, because they don't know anything. And then the reason
right.
that candidate down a very bad road and stuff, and stuff that's not going to make that candidate successful.
Well, I remember there were, and I guess when they didn't connect and then they lost and they wondered why did they lose, and they lost because they didn't connect to the city. And they say in Yonkers, as you probably well know, if you haven't lived in Yonkers for at least 25 years, not only are you a carpetbagger as far as they're concerned, but you don't have a clue of what's going on in this city.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it's a reality. It is a reality.
Absolutely, yes. No, I absolutely agree. That is a part of the, you know, the part of the issue and process as well. Yes, no, absolutely. There's a lot of people look down on people if they don't live here like you said, 25 years and stuff like that. They think that they're like a carpetbagger and stuff like that. So it really brings an extra thing to a person who wants to run, because what's going to happen? You know, am I going to be minimized in this process if I have this city? Because I don't know. It just gets crazy. Has he really this? But I think the running for election has been harder and harder throughout the years, I think.
It does, but I think that I think it's gotten harder because people are disconnected from the real issues in a community. And
absolutely.
If you feel good about the people you want to represent, it's about the people. The city will survive while people die. People die all the time, and people get born all the time. But the bottom line is that the city will survive. Yonkers will be here 100 years from now. The question is, how do you serve the people who will live in this city now and give birth to children who will also live in this city? How do you represent them in the best light? And that's what where the disconnect is. If you don't respect this city, that's any city. If you don't respect the people you live with, your neighbors mm-hmm. and who live close by in your building or the house next door or down in the next neighborhood, then why are you here? What are you running for? What are you trying to represent? Maybe you shouldn't even be here if you don't want to represent anybody.
That's true. Absolutely.
And it doesn't mean you have to be an elected official, right? Can't you just represent yourself and say, well, we're having trouble with garbage collection here. Maybe we should be able to find somebody who can help us with this issue?
Yes.
You know?
That's true. Absolutely. Yes.
So,
you don't even need to be a candidate for public office. You can be just a regular citizen who sees some issues and you want to bring some issues to the table and bring some issues out there and everything.
You volunteer. You're not an elected official, but you volunteer your services. And that's helpful to a community. You may not touch everybody, but you touch one person or two or three or 10 or 20 or 25. It doesn't matter if you just touch one person. I mean, how much more is there in life?
That's also very true. Absolutely.
So I'm just floored. I just don't understand. I get the impression that I've been following Yonkers for so long. I'm starting to feel that everybody just uses Yonkers as a stepping stone to some other bigger and better thing. In the meantime, the public is left behind.
Yes, that's true.
Why do we get the shaft in this whole process? What's the problem here?
Yeah, that's true. Really, honestly, it's true. It's sad. Yeah. Really sad. Because they always claim they're going to help the people, but then we don't see them until it's time for them to run for re-election and everything, and that's the sad part. Because the people that they said that they, you know, stand with me and I will lead you guys, and I'm saying to myself, well, you're not leading, then you're not leading anyone other than yourself.
Right. Oh,
it's amazing.
You know, I can't believe it, Delphine. We've been yakking away now for 45 minutes. My apology.
Oh,
I hope I didn't keep you.
Oh, no problem.
From
my pleasure. Always enjoy being on your show with you, Hezzy. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's really great. Well, I think we're going to be on together again next week. I think. I'm
not
sure.
Absolutely.
Okay,
that'd be great.
So
thank you so much.
We'll find out what the ramifications of this game that Andrea and Heasty and the governor are mired in. We'll find out
that'd be great to talk about next week. Absolutely. It'd be great. Thank you so much, Hezzy, for allowing me to be on your show. And I always enjoy talking with you.
Oh, my pleasure. Be well, Delphine, and Happy New Year. All
Thank
the
you
best
so
to you and the family.
Thank you so much.
Thank
the same to you. Thank you so much, Hezzy. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Bye. Oh, my goodness. Well, that was a really terrific talk, as we always, with Delphine. Delphine Musler, he's the publisher and editor of the Yonkers Insider. And you could look it up at any search engine, Yonkers Insider. And you'll get to the website. He's been around 20 years or so, and you know, he's just part of the landscape. He's part of what makes Yonkers tick. And some people love him, some people don't love him as much. So, but whatever, that's everybody's story, right? But I think he's done a really bang up job, and that's always nice to see. Anyway, I think we're just at that point where we need to get going ourselves. Hope we didn't keep you on for too long. I don't see any more national or international news that impresses me at the moment. I'm going to quickly look just in case to see if anything else has come online, just to make sure that I have all the information here. One moment here. Oh, this is really quite interesting. I don't know if you heard about this. Venice is going to charge people who come on a trip to Venice. They're going to charge them up to 10 euros for access to the city. Can you imagine? It's the measure is in Italy's 2019 budget law and will allow local government in Venice to charge day trippers for access to the city's historic center as a way to help defray the considerable cost of maintaining the popular tourist destination built on water. So that's what the mayor said. Unbelievable. So that's going to be very interesting. So the fee is 10 euros. That's about $2.90. As much as $11.50, depending on the season. So it's going to be very, very interesting. So the landing fee is from €2.50, which is about $2.90, to as much as 10 euros, which will probably be during the summer, and that's $11.50, to enter. So all these things that are happening, they're going to take the world by storm. And who knows, we're talking about charging people to enter New York City by car. So I wonder how that's going to go too. All this is part of the same situation, but everything is being monetized. So if you just look in one direction, they're going to charge you. So it's going to be very interesting, how this is all going to transpire. Let me just quickly see in case something else came in like big news event of some sort. One second. One moment here. No, I think we're fine. I think we've covered it all. And all right, so we'll just have to see how things work out. Well, I want to wish you again a Happy New Year to everyone that's been with us, and thank you for joining us, and thank you for reading the website, and thank you for listening to our broadcast as well. And we hope you'll stay with us and hope to be relevant to you as we move ahead into the new 2019. My God, that is absolutely mind-boggling to me. Anyway, so be well, and we'll speak to you soon. Have a great day. And there we go. And so have a goodbye.